Welcome to the VA Tourism Podcast, and I am Coach Benton Williams. The VA Tourism Podcast is dedicated to Africa's travel and tourism industry, where leaders from the private and public sectors get to talk to us. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, and Google Podcasts. In this episode, travel writer and conservationist Charlotte Boyversing looks at conservation efforts in the midst of COVID-19 in her adopted home in Uganda in East Africa. Charlotte, a British expat, moved to Uganda in 2009 as a voluntary service overseas volunteer working on anti-poaching and human wildlife conflict project. Welcome to the VA Tourism Podcast, and I'm joined by Charlotte Boyversing. I hope I got the name right, Charlotte.
Right, that's lovely. Thank you.
Yeah, Charlotte. I mean, it's a tradition when you come on this show, you tell us about yourself, and then we look at how COVID is treating you.
Okay, so yes, my name's Charlotte Boyversing. I have a Chiganda name, which is Nagawa, which in the local language means that I am the protector of the red-tailed monkey in Chima. And I have a lot of fun with this name, actually. In fact, some of my Ugandan friends called me Nagawa and don't even realise I'm called Charlotte. So I have a lot of fun with that. And it's quite poignant to have that name because it has a really strong conservation message. And in the local culture, when you have a Chiganda name, you automatically have a totem that it's your responsibility to protect. So I have a quite glamorous monkey. Some people have a mushroom or a tree or something like that. And they're not allowed to kill that animal or chop down that tree or eat it or anything else like that. So there's a really nice conservation aspect to having a Ugandan name, a Chiganda name. So Uganda is my adopted home. I've been here since 2009. I arrived as a volunteer with the Uganda Conservation Foundation, a British charity that does a lot of work on human wildlife conflict and anti-poaching in the national parks. So I came here on a two-year contract as a VSO, which is a voluntary service overseas, which used to be funded by the British government, but it's for professional volunteers who want to share their skills with developing countries. And I ended up in Uganda not knowing very much at all about Uganda. I guess I'd heard of Idi Amin and Lake Victoria, but I don't think I knew much else at all about Uganda. But I loved it as soon as I got here, and very, very beautiful country and incredibly welcoming people. So I've had some really great experiences with UCF to start with, and we would go to Queen Elizabeth National Park and hang out with the rangers. And we would see, the most interesting part, I think, was not just the animals, but meeting the villagers, subsistence farmers who live on the edge of the national park, who have to put up with buffaloes and elephants and all the animals that would try and get into the shambas and eat the crops. And so we had interventions like what we call an elephant trench, which is a great long trench. It might be several kilometres long, and the idea being that it's a physical barrier that stops an elephant wandering into your garden. And because elephants are incredibly destructive, and what they don't eat, they can trample. So that was my first job here in Uganda. I was fundraising and doing some marketing for UCF, and we were trying to build the capacity of rangers that worked in Queen Elizabeth National Park. So in these big remote areas, it's hard to cover a lot of ground, and generally the poachers know the area better than anyone else. So we gave the rangers capacity to patrol using boats on the lakes and rivers, because it was quicker to jump in a boat and go straight across the lake than it was to find a car, find the fuel, and then drive round. By that time, the poachers would have escaped. So I really cut my teeth in Uganda in conservation. Although I'm not a conservationist by training, I'm actually a marketing manager by training. But it's such a diverse country, and because it's a developing country, there are many, many environmental issues. I've really spent a lot of my time volunteering to promote anti-poaching issues, bird watching, gorilla tracking, and so many things. So conservation is my big passion, and even now I'm still very actively involved in lots of conservation projects.
Okay, so at what point did you directly come into media, or beginning your blog, The Diary of Muzungu?
Yes, I think I'd heard this blog word, 10 years ago or something, and I thought, gosh, that sounds like the kind of thing I'd like to do. And I was working in proposal writing, actually, in report writing in London when I lived there. So I had the formal training for business writing, and I'd gradually built up my portfolio working on CSR projects, and I really liked writing for the staff newsletter and that kind of thing. So I was really getting into communications through official, corporate type work. But I wanted to, I really had a very strong desire to come and live in Africa since I was a teenager. So the blog was a way to document this life-changing experience. And rather than write lots of emails to friends and family back home, I thought, if you're interested in my new life, why don't you follow my blog? And so that's how it started. It was just me, sleeping under a mosquito net for the first time, and then going out into the bush with the rangers. And so it was a really, the first few months really were amazing. And I love birds as well. So the tropical birds that we have just outside our window here in Uganda were just things I wanted to shout about all the time. So the blog was a hobby. It kind of got a bit out of control. And after a couple of years, I met a Ugandan who's a teacher in tourism, tourism marketing expert. And he told me I was promoting Uganda in a way no one else was, which it's like a light bulb moment for me. Gosh, because I thought, I didn't realize I was promoting Uganda. I was just telling the world about my new life and conservation issues here. So now I promote Uganda and East Africa generally for tourism, but I have a lot of stories about conservation because those are the issues that are really dear to me.
Okay. Now, how has the pandemic affected conservation in Uganda? I mean, it has affected everywhere in the world, but the magnitude.
How has it affected the country as a whole? I work in tourism and
no, we can just zoom in on conservation and tourism. Yes, generally you can give a bit an overview of it, but yeah, my interest is about tourism and conservation, the effect of pandemic.
Just talk generally to start with. Uganda is not doing so badly right now. We have less than 20 deaths of coronavirus, but things have really gathered speed over the last 2 weeks, and Ugandans are now starting to realise that COVID is real, and that we have to take action. But unfortunately, people are quite reluctant to wear masks, and people who have them don't wear them properly, and they still don't understand that you have to social distance. And really, in terms of awareness, we're very much behind the curve, I would say, here. But fortunately, the number of infections is comparatively low. If we compare ourselves, for example, to Kenya and Tanzania, and the deaths remain low as well. And of course, we have a very young population. Over half the population is under 35. So we're hopeful that we won't suffer too much. Although, of course, the economy is on its knees. The airport and the borders have been closed for 4 months now, April, May, June, July. Yeah, almost 5 months. And tourism is the number one foreign revenue earner. So, yeah, a lot of people are really suffering now financially.
Okay, I mean, tourism was on the back foot. But if we come to conservation and also looking at how a lot of the funding of this conservation or some of these parks in Africa are through the activities of tourists or, through tourism. And you have a situation in your country where right now tourism is kind of shut, right? How then are they able to navigate now?
Perhaps I'll just give you a little description of where I live, Kojo, because I live on the edge of a national park. Kibale National Park in western Uganda is about 500 square kilometres, and it's one of our top parks because of the chimpanzee population. So there are 13 types of primate here, but the chimpanzees are the people our relatives that people come to see, and that's shut. So even though some of the parks have reopened, the primate parks remain closed. So the parks that have the chimpanzees and the gorillas, and that's because we know that they are susceptible. They could catch COVID because we are approximately 97-98% the same DNA. So let me talk about my personal experience here. So I live at a place called Sunbird Hill, which is owned by my friend, and the land touches the national park. So the lack of tourism has absolutely devastated everything that's happening around here, because all the people that we interact with are guides or rangers. And most of them have just completely lost their jobs. I mean, nominally, they still have a job, but they've been sent home with no money or a bit of pocket money. And the people who are from the village are doing better than some because they probably still can farm. So we have, it's very lush area here. We have two harvests a year. So people are there planting cassava and so on. But then there are other people who move up and down the country, and they are not getting any tourists. They're not driving any tourists around, and they're not getting the tips, because the tips can be as worth as much as the actual salary. And that's how, and our guides are really affected, because not only do they not have a salary, they also miss the guide, the tips, which are sometimes in dollars. So the Uganda Wildlife Authority have committed to keeping everything going for a year. The head, Sam Mwanda, announced that they would carry on funding the anti-poaching patrols for until July. They committed to 12 months worth, but there's a huge amount of insecurity within the conservation sector and, of course, the tourism sector, because we don't know how long the pandemic's going to last for, and at what point do we put money into those reserves. We say that the other parks are open, the savannah parks are open, but who's going there? Because we don't have a lot of domestic tourists, and domestic tourists pay a lot less to enter the park, a lot less than an international tourist would. So we are in a really, really dire situation now, and I'm not sure how we're going to make up the shortfall in the long run. We are different people are fundraising. African Wildlife Foundation, for example, has been very visible throughout the pandemic, and they've fundraised a lot to support rangers. And even though a ranger may be on a salary from the Uganda Wildlife Authority, the concern is that these rangers worry about losing their jobs, and they may turn a blind eye to people going to the parks and poach. And we've seen the increase in poaching across Africa, and most of it we believe is for subsistence, but there's still the danger of the commercial element coming in and taking advantage of the fact that people don't have the money that they used to. And also, you know, some rangers can be persuaded to turn a blind eye or even become poachers themselves.
Okay, interesting. Now, then then you can possibly say that sometimes there's a misconception that nature is getting a break from humans during the COVID pandemic. You know, in the face of the pressure from land grabbing, deforestation, illegal mining, wildlife poaching. What's your stance on that?
Yes, we've seen the chimps many times from private land, and we do wonder whether they miss human interaction. But my feeling is that the chimpanzees and gorillas might be enjoying a bit of a holiday, because even though you can only spend an hour with them if you go on an organised tour, these animals are wild, and I'm sure they prefer just being left to do their own thing. We've seen clearer skies, haven't we, across the world. So it's wonderful to see the environment recovering. And you can see Mount Fuji, or is it Mount Kenya you can now see from Nairobi? I hope I've got that correct. I do feel that wildlife is recovering, and protected areas are recovering to some degree. But then also, I'm very concerned about areas that are not protected areas, because most of Africa's wildlife is outside the gazetted areas, the national parks, the conservancies, and so on. And here we know that a bushbuck was poached, and a bushbuck is an animal that's not rare, but it's quite it's not common to see one. So I was very disappointed to find that we've actually found the trap of an animal that was killed on our land a few weeks ago, and that's the first time that we've heard of animals being poached on in this part of the land. We hear that there was a plan to catch an elephant recently. The issue we have now is with increase in human wildlife conflict. So we had elephants on our land last night. So they did quite a lot of damage. They were in our neighbour's banana plantation. They were uprooting cassava and sweet potatoes. Now, you don't have tourists. You don't have a regular income. So now more than ever, you need all those crops. You really don't need elephants or chimps or baboons or anything else coming in. Literally destroying everything sometimes in one night. So, yeah, some kids that we interact with told us that some villagers were trying to catch an elephant. They were trying to, and is this because the elephant was going on their land? Is this because they are looking for extra money and they want the ivory? I don't know. I don't think you can just kill an elephant and manage to sell the ivory just like that. But this is something fairly new and a bit unexpected. And at the same time, trees are being felled outside the protected area. So there is, climate change is going to suffer as a result of this, because people are cutting to charcoal burn. That's quick and easy money to burn charcoal. So we are really worried about the environment outside the protected park as well. It's not just what's happening within.
Okay. Now, in terms of policy, have you seen any deliberate policies by the government to at least so that we don't roll back those achievements that we've chopped in terms of conservation?
Honestly, I haven't. I'm impressed that UWA has made the very public commitments to, keep people in their jobs and to keep up the law enforcement patrols over the coming year. But beyond that, no, I haven't seen anything from government about supporting conservation in Uganda.
Now,
I think individuals are trying, individual tour companies and conservation organisations are trying to do what they can, fundraising for villagers, for example, who would traditionally earn from tourism. But I don't see anything from government, but somebody may correct me if I've missed out on that.
Okay, no, that's fine. Now, if you look at the tourism space, do you think that domestic tourism in Uganda, have some prospects?
Generally speaking, Kojo, yes. I like looking to Kenya, to seeing what they've done with their domestic tourism market and how they've completely overhauled tourism in that country over the last 5 years. Say it's incredibly impressive. And I love meeting Kenyans, because when they say they go away for the weekend, they go to the Mara, they go to Mombasa, they're incredibly adventurous. So it is possible, but Uganda is much further down the line. But I do meet Ugandans who are in their 20s and say early 30s. They're adventurous. They like to travel in groups. They like to go away for the weekend somewhere and party. And some of them are into the safari activities as well. So people might say, oh, Africans don't want to see animals and go on safaris, but actually that's not quite true. I think this younger demographic gets it, and they are interested in conservation issues and going out and exploring and seeing animals. Then domestic tourists, and then but the older people who travel, people 40s, 50s above, they are still more likely to want to go to Mombasa or somewhere outside Uganda. They don't see Uganda as a holiday destination, and that's partly because of the pricing hasn't been right and the packages haven't been right. But we do talk a lot about domestic tourism now in Uganda, and hopefully the moment is right for that, because we really need Ugandans and expats living in Uganda to make lodge bookings and to keep a little bit of revenue coming in to keep people in jobs.
Okay. What is the one thing that you think where we should, I mean, we can take back or we can do it better in post, you know, in the post-pandemic tourism world?
You know, there've been some silver linings from during coronavirus for me, living on the edge of a national park, and I've spent a lot of time outdoors, and I've always been an outdoors kind of person, but I noticed that if I get fed up and I go outside just for 5 minutes, it really resets my brain and puts me on a whole other positive wavelength. Just noticing a flower and hearing a bird sing and so on. And I think that's a feeling that many people have had around the world. You know, even people have been in towns and stuck in apartments and things, and they've really had a yearning to be outside and go to the park and so on. And I hope we remember this. I hope we harness this, because this can be a really powerful feeling that, you know, nature can just make you feel so much better about yourself and about life. And how, you know, how do we harness that to so people understand the intrinsic value of nature and wildlife, rather than seeing it as a commodity? And I think things go through phases, don't they? Some people would say, yes, let's give a value to an elephant, because then we're more likely to protect it if we see it as a tourism investment. But let's not forget that all these living things also have an intrinsic value, which I know has really kept me positive during this time. When I'm a travel blogger. Normally I'm on the road, as you know, Kojo. We meet at travel events all around East Africa and London and so on. I teach digital marketing to tour operators. So everything that I normally do has been on hold. So it's been really important to me to get out there and have a look and be intrigued and captivated by nature. And how can we harness that going forward, that pure joy? It's interesting. I've been listening to a lot of audiobooks. My internet's not very good. We can rarely get newspapers. And so I've really relied on reading and audiobooks. And one of the top downloads was The Sound of the Forest. And it's 30 minutes of raindrops and a waterfall. And it just showed you how people really yearn for this positive connection with nature. And yeah, let's remember that feeling and try and work with that as when we have to try and push our way out of this situation.
No, that's fine. But anything for the travelers, for tourists and travelers, what we need to do in terms of, you know, adhering to some of the ethics as a traveler.
This is a great opportunity, isn't it, for us to rethink how we travel and to plan to travel more sustainably. I was interested to hear the podcast that you had with Judy of STTA in Kenya, and they're doing some really fantastic work talking about sustainable tourism in the future, which is not just about protecting wildlife, of course. It's about getting community involvement in all aspects of the value chain, and also looking at reducing our carbon footprint when we travel. I would like people to interact more with communities and to travel far more responsibly. I would like to see plastic water bottles banned, you know, full stop. I know Kenya has banned them from the national parks. I think that was in June. And please don't travel with a plastic bottle. Bring your own metal bottle. These small little things make a big difference. As I say, I live on the edge of a national park, and we don't want a tour van to turn up and empty a day's worth of plastic bottles with us. We're in a village. How do we recycle 20 plastic bottles? These things do add up, don't they? So I'd also say to people, if you are planning a holiday, or you were planning to come to Africa, please postpone and don't cancel. We need you here. It's not just about needing people's money, but it's also about needing the exposure and needing the good stories that people take back home and share on Facebook as well. And I would say in this lean period that we have, if people can think about how they can make cash donations in the short term, because honestly, cash does make a big difference to the motivation levels of guides and rangers and so on, and local people. And I'd also even say, because it's all connected, is don't eat bush meat, don't buy ivory or wildlife products, because, you know, this is what's driving the increase in poaching, isn't it? And it's all connected. You know, so many aspects of our lives are far more connected than we realised until this year, really.
Thank you so much for your time, Charlotte. And it's been great having you to share your insight in the work you've been doing in Uganda and East Africa.
Okay, thank you, Kojo. Thank you very much for hosting me. I'd like to share a few links with you. So if people are interested, they can do some further reading around the issues.
No, you can name your site where people can get you or interact with you.
Yes, so my site is called Diary of a Muzungu. And Muzungu, M-U-Z-U-N-G-U. And I'm active on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And then there's the blog, the same name is www.diaryofamuzungu.com.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kojo.